only Friday night's defeat to Barrow this week. Tom Mayle said it was such a disappointment. That was the game after such an effort was put in to drive the attendance. Kev O'Connell says it's great to see so many in the stadium, and at least we're not talking about the goalkeepers. Pete Robinson also mentions the attendance and says it was a shame not to win in front of a crowd that size, but can't fault any in that stretch team. Trev Griffiths labels it as the least enjoyable game of the season. Too many players out of position and a bench full of kids. Still, Barrow scored far too easily. H. Robinson can't fault any of the players, saying injuries have now caught up with us. Shedview wants us to tread water until the injured players come back. Stuart Grimley doesn't have a problem with that. A threadbare squad, a dodgy pen, let's regroup and move forward. Jonathan Ditt says you could sense the loss coming. Barrow were too organised and disciplined. We lacked a killer pass. Joe felt somewhat on fumes and they played well for being at the bare bones. Pete thought the team huffed and puffed, but it was always going to be hard after the lineup was announced. Bob points out that Mickey and CBR were the only two from the opening day that played in their correct positions. Graham Miles thought it was a game too far, and the tactics of hitting it long to the strikers just didn't work against their back three. Darren Stevens says any momentum the depleted Alex side might have had after scoring was killed off by Barrow's third. Joe Cosby calls it a laughably poor refereeing display, and he's very disappointed in Ray's dive. Ben Benson hates to blame the ref or diving opponents. We were threadbare and not our best. Hope there's some loans sorted. Captain Britton calls on Charles to back Bell in January, saying the squad is wafer thin. James labels CBR and Tracy as passengers, and Charles wonders how Demetriou got man of the match. Keith thought CBR was unlucky with his opportunity. We were beaten by a good team. Chris Mason labels the referee a clown. George Ray is a diver and wants a new goalie, please.
Hello there. Ho, ho, ho. It's Santa Graham here wishing you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We are getting ready, of course, for a feast of football following the Alex. Four games in a short space of time, and let's hope Santa can help deliver some more points in our push for promotion by the end of the season. It's been a great first half of the season for Lee Bell and his players. Let's hope now that they can repeat that, but add a little bit more during the second period, and then we will be in for some terrific celebrations at the end of April. But before all that, celebrate in style, enjoy it with your family, and get behind the Alex in the coming games over the Christmas programme. They need you, and we need the points. Up the Alex, it's Santa Graham wishing you a merry, merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Hello, Merry Christmas, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Rail Women podcast. Thank you there to our Secret Santa for opening the show for us. I'm sure you're all aware who that was. To go through Friday night's defeat to Barrow, our panel today are Aaron Lewis. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, thanks for having me back on.
Not a problem. Steve Bennett. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Merry Christmas.
And Tim Robinson. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Stu. Hi, guys.
Okay, let's start then with the team news. I was on Radio Stoke about an hour before kickoff and did something I've never done on there before. I predicted a crew defeat. I just couldn't see a way that this team, this squad, was going to beat the informed team in League Two. Is that how you felt?
Kind of a little bit. It was when we'd sort of heard rumblings about, you know, issues. Obviously, we know we've got a good number of injuries anyway, and there was sort of rumblings about a further several faces that might have been missing due to, I believe, there's an illness in the camp. So then when you also take that into account, you see the team news come through, and I think threadbare is probably the right word I'd use to describe the squad at the minute. So it was tough looking, and there was a little bit of debate amongst the little group of people I had that were going about how exactly that group was going to line up as well, after you see the list of names.
Yeah, and just jump in there. The actual names themselves aren't, you know, it's not terrible stuff. You're not playing people who you wouldn't trust or whatever, but it's the fact that we must have had four or five square pegs in round holes, mustn't we? And that's the issue. And of course, there's no plan B if you're that paper thin that you've got basically 10 outfield players fit. And arguably, as the game transpired, two of those went off with illness anyway. So eight fit, really, and two who, you know, put their body on the line, didn't they, for the club, which, you know, all credit to them.
I think we're well past plan B now, Steve. I think we're on plan O, P, Q, somewhere along those lines with this squad. Tim, I'm sure you listened in last week. There was a little bit of a disagreement with the goalkeeper situation, in that some people were saying it was time for Harvey Davis to take a spell out. Some of us, myself included, said, let's get him to January and get someone else in then. Were you surprised? Were you happy to see Tom Booth come in on Friday night?
I don't think I was really particularly happy or surprised. I mean, I've probably been more of a defender of Harvey Davis than a number of people. But even I got to the stage after the last couple of games where I thought that something had to change. However, I agree with what Mark said on last week's podcast, that if you do throw Booth in, as he has now, you can't then take him out again. So, I mean, I guess the only slight caveat to that is maybe Harvey Davis was one of the ones that was sick and that forced his hand and Harvey Davis might have played otherwise. But if we assume that Booth was picked on merit after recent performances from Davis, then I don't think you can start chopping and changing, because what happens is you get to a situation like we got to with Richards and Jaskalainen, where one of them's in for a couple of weeks and then throws a few in, and then the next one's in for a couple of weeks and throws a few in. And you end up getting to a stage where no one knows where they are, the defence don't know who's behind them, and it just becomes a complete mess. So as far as I'm concerned now, Booth has to stay in, no matter what happens. So, yeah, I wasn't particularly surprised or happy, but, you know, it was one of them. Davis had made so many mistakes that something had to give.
The only caveat, I kind of agree with what you're saying there, Tim. The only caveat I'd bring in is we've got the looming spectre of January and obviously the transfer window that brings in. So, like you say, Booth is in there for... He's the incumbent now, I think, for me, unless it's injury-related. But then if we do some business or there's a new face brought in, I think it could easily chop and change there.
Yeah, I think Booth takes us to the window now, doesn't he? Unless, as you say, there's an injury or something. It's got to be that way.
Steve, I think you were a little bit more vocal in the fact that you wanted Harvey Davis to change and bring Tom Booth in, with the argument that he is one of our own. So we're learning. He's learning from mistakes that we can capitalise on rather than Liverpool can.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was somewhere in Tim's camp for quite a while, really, in the sticking up for Harvey Davis for quite a while. But those errors and they're not necessarily glaring errors, but they are technical errors in terms of he shouldn't be letting that one in at the near post. It shouldn't be going under his body. They were getting more and more often. And then, of course, the last game, it just got too much, and you got the distinct impression that his head had gone. And that's a very difficult place to be as a goalkeeper, because the opposition probably know you've been struggling a bit and are going to try. And from my point of view, from Tom Booth's point of view, how bad would it have had to get if he wasn't getting a game now? Because after Harvey Davis had thrown some in, and as I said, it's not just the last game, but the last game was a crowning glory, wasn't it, for it, that Tom surely deserves a chance, and particularly as a club as we are, who promote our own, that we have to surely therefore say, look, Tom, your chance, mate, have a go, because... yeah, otherwise you'd be wondering, as Tom would probably be sat there wondering, why am I here? But yeah, I think it was time for a change. And like Tim and Aaron had said there, that I think that he's got to be the incumbent. We've got to play him over the next however many games until January. And then we don't know what discussions are going on behind the scenes, do we, as to Harvey Davis. And and or any others, and I'm sure that it'll be reset if there is somebody else comes in.
Just to move on from the keeper a little bit, Stu, and back to the lineup. What was really, really noticeable for me when I saw the team sheet was that I don't think any of the bench had ever played a minute of league football.
That's correct, Tim.
And you know, I don't know if I ever remember that before from a crew lineup.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's pretty bold, like you say, of that kind of thing. I think it does. This is kind of building up to something I was kind of having a bit of a rant at in the week, that obviously we are threadbare with various different injuries. Now, some of that blame I think would possibly be portioned out to players in such way that, you know, some of them maybe are just having to not as willing, should we say, to get out and play. You look at like players like Mickey Dimitri, who's got a broken toe and clearly got something wrong with his shoulder as well, and he's still battling on and playing every minute. But for me, I'm not going to lean that way. I'm going to lean more into, do we need to, like, as a club, rather than fans in particular, do we need to have a look at what's going on with the medical staff? Because we've got a lot of players who can get a thigh strain and then, or as we're told is a thigh strain, and then can be out for 2+ months. And it just feels like that doesn't necessarily happen at a lot of other clubs. It always seems a bit odd to me, like, various different issues that you would think, okay, that's going to be a month out maybe, and then they can just be gone for weeks and weeks on end and you don't really hear anything from them. I think a lot of this kind of got me up from hearing the injury update in the week and hearing that Tabernier is another 6 weeks off still, and you know, there's various other players we aren't going to see over this spell of games where we do kind of need more people in. And it's frustrating me a little bit anyway.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? It makes you wonder. Do we need to turn the radiators off in the treatment room?
Aaron, I said to Graham last week, you know, it was his first time on the podcast criticising the goalkeeping department. I feel like you ticking off having a go at the medical department is now the whole club done as a podcast at some point in our history. So well done. You've got that final box ticked. Right, let's move on then to the game. I'm going to sort of... I had a question about Tom Booth. My question was going to be, how did he actually do when he got the start? But I think we can probably tie that into the first goal. Tim, we can't say that first Barrow goal was a moment of genius from them. It looked really bad for me watching on the telly. Did it feel that way to you in the stadium as well?
Soft. It just looked soft. The ball's chipped in from the right and it's in the air forever. The guy who scores, Whitfield, it doesn't look like he's in a dangerous position. You know, he's got Dimitriou in front of him. He's got Billington behind him. You know, it's a floated sort of dinked ball into him. And he somehow manages to avoid Dimitriou and then sort of turn and hit it first time. And it's difficult to say. I mean, he miscues the shot, which probably doesn't help the keeper in a weird way because he'll be set up for a shot. You know, he was probably set up for him to take a touch and then hit it rather than hit it first time. But yeah, it's a soft ball in. It's pretty poor defending, or maybe weak is the right word to put it. And then yeah, it's a soft but probably quite deceptive shot on the turn that does for Booth. You could maybe say he's in a no man's land a little bit. He hasn't really come. He hasn't really stayed. He's sort of halfway in between. Yeah, it's just a soft goal. And I kind of felt that we were just about getting a bit of a foothold in the game at that point. So it was a real killer, because you kind of think with the team you've got, the only way you're getting something out of that is going ahead and clinging on, especially with the lack of options off the bench. So to go behind against a team that, you know, proved themselves to be really organised and disciplined, and without necessarily being excellent, just very, very competent, It was going to be a really tough ask, and it kind of killed the mood in the stadium as well.
Yeah, as defenders, they've got to get so much tighter and not allow him to get that shot away. Get tight and become a wall between the goal and the ball. And they didn't either. I don't want to slag off the young players, but you know, Lewis Billington didn't get anywhere near him, to be honest. And I think if we mentioned Tom Booth there. If Tom Booth comes for that original ball, he's going to get nowhere near it, and we're going to absolutely slaughter him, because it was far too far out from goal. That's your defenders. Your defenders have got to deal with that. They've not going to allow Whitfield to turn. And as you said, it kind of killed the atmosphere and our foothold in the game, because I thought that although it had been fairly open to start with and they'd done quite well, I thought that we'd started to get a bit of a hold on the game, and we'd started to play a lot better, particularly considering the lineup out there.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. You know, I was talking last week about Lewis Billington and said he sort of slotted in. Players are allowed to make mistakes, in my opinion. Academy players are given one or two passes when they come in. Hopefully it's something to learn about. Tim, I'm just going to pick up something you just said, because it was 1-0 at half time. I was also of the opinion that I didn't really expect much from that point in the game, because I thought Barrow were pretty good. I seem to think that they were better than most Crew fans that I've seen on social media, in the sense that they were organised and they knew exactly what they were going to do. If you put organised, well-drilled players into a semi-decent squad, you've got quite a good League Two team. I think Stockport were the last ones I saw who were that organised. Obviously, their players were better. I just didn't really see any way back into the game with the players playing in the positions they were playing in, with the options off the bench being 1-0 down at half-time.
Yeah, well, I think the key there for me that you've said is the positions that the players were playing in. The way we set up with, let's be fair, even taking into account that there's illness and injury in the camp, but from the players that are on the pitch, and we're missing our three creative midfielders in Tabana, Powell and White. What we had out, we had two creative threats on the pitch in Aaron Rowe and Shiloh Tracy. But the way we set up, it kind of negated both of them, because Rowe was playing as a wing-back and Tracy was playing at a 10, where, look, I know that's what we want to make him into, but the evidence says that he's never going to be that. The one time in that first half where he actually influenced the game was where he went right out onto the right wing, beat his man, crossed it in, and we nearly scored right at the end of the first half. That was the one time where he really, really caused them a problem, and it was when he was out wide. So having him as a 10 and having Rowe miles away from their goal, it meant we basically took our best two creative players and put them in positions where they couldn't do anything to affect the game. So, yeah, I was the same. I kind of thought, at halftime, 1-0 down, I thought he's got to make some sort of change to the system or the personnel here, because this isn't going to, we're never going to score if he stays in the system we're in.
Okay, Aaron, let's go into the second half then. I want to talk about one of our own academy graduates. He came through the ranks. What a dickhead George Ray is.
It's a pretty apt word, I think that is. I mean, that was one of them. So, it's where I was sitting for the game was kind of right by where the players come out for the tunnel. So I'm it's right eye level with me. You could see exactly what was going on, and just absolutely baffled. Like I say, I kind of messaged you and was saying, like, that's a dive that Tom Daly would have been proud of, because he's I can't quite be sure, but it does look like he's probably even in an offside position as the ball comes in. It's a bit of a overhit ball, to be fair, as well, coming in from the left-hand side. He's ahead of the last man, like you say, because he looked like he was offside. He's jumped straight up in the air. The ball's still well clear of him. It's gone way above his head. It maybe, is it Nevitt, I think, at the back post is with him, and maybe he's got the slightest of touches. There's not much in it. And he's gone over like he's... Well, it looked a bit more, I say Tom Daly, it looked like he was trying to do the high jump Fosbury flop, to be fair.
Because he looked like he'd been shot from a cannon, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's gone down, and somehow the referee has bought it, and I've watched it back a few times on the highlights and everything, and someone, I think, put it on Twitter as well, and I still cannot fathom how he's seen that. I mean, I'm surprised my voice is holding up a little bit, because I was giving the liner running in front of me a dog's abuse as well at that point. not, don't advise it, kids, don't abuse officials, but still. I still can't believe how it was given. But I guess at the end of the day, you know, that's what he's gone out to do. He's always been that kind of player. He was even that player kind of player when he was playing for us. And I think it was something that kind of emblematic of how Barrow played a lot of the game, to be fair, that they were very good at what we all generously call the dark arts, is what I was going to say, Steve. I was going to go with that instead. Yeah. And basically, like I say, won the penalty from there.
Yeah, I said before we started recording that I haven't been as angry at somebody or an incident for a long, long time. At 48, I'm long past getting excited and angry at football matches because it's not that important, is it, really? It's a load of guys, you know, a bit of fun, really, at the end of the day. But last night and even this morning, I am still fuming, absolutely fuming. It's how one of our own can think that that's okay. I know that George Ray had his issues and, you know, he wasn't crapping on the club, was he, when they were looking after him after the Cornwall incident. But we won't go into that anymore. And, you know, it is just absolutely galling how he can sort of return home, as it were, and do that to the club, because there is there's no way of dressing that up other than blatant cheating. Absolute cheating. And as you said, Aaron, I don't know how the ref was an interesting whole that he was a podcast in himself last night. I've not seen a ref guess as much as he did last night. And I think that the penalty was a guess. He guessed that he must have been fouled because he can't have seen him be fouled because he wasn't. There's nobody. I wouldn't mind that our defenders are so bad they weren't within a yard of him to propel him anywhere. And, you know, there was one or two incidents, wasn't there, later on, like when I think it was George Ray again, fell over when he was, he had CBR one side and Nevitt the other, who were about to nick the ball off him and run goalwards. And he fell out, literally dived over and tried to rugby tackle Nevitt, didn't he, on his way down, and he got a foul for it. I think, as I said, I think the referee was guessed an awful lot last night. I'm not calling him biased or anything like that because, you know, that isn't true, but it's I think he guessed, and I think he lost the game before he'd even started it or even got hold of it. I thought he lost the game and he lost the plot a little bit and was guessing from there onwards. And I think we were the victim of that with the penalty and also not getting to ourselves later on.
It's I'm fully sort of in agreement with you on that, Steve. The only bit I'm going to say is it still didn't quite match Salford away earlier this season for my levels of annoyance at walking away from a game. But
I wasn't there at that one. So.
Fair.
I was right at the other end of the ground for the dive for the penalty. In fact, I was probably almost as far away from that incident as I was from the Cornwall incident. But it was difficult to tell. I mean, it looked soft. But having seen it back on the video, I mean, that is atrocious. It is an atrocious dive. It's an atrocious decision. And both player and referee should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves.
I just found it really odd that he gave that. And like all the way through the first half, CBR and Nevitt were getting shoved off the ball in open play all the way through whenever there was a ball to compete with. And they didn't get anything. I just thought it was a really, really odd decision. And then I think he sort of went out of his way not to even it up later on in the game.
You got that impression, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, it was just weird. It was a weird refereeing decision and a weird refereeing display. Aaron, I'll come back to you. The goal for Crew didn't take too long. And, you know, Rio Adebisi, yet again, what a cross. And then what a header from Elliot Nevitt.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of comes from the set piece. And like I say, beautiful cross in. I can't believe I've got this far without mentioning their keeper up till this point, who looked like he was trying to play for time from about the third minute with having to go off to get strapping on and then immediately removing the strapping as soon as he got back to his goal. And all these various different pirouettes that he was doing before he took a kick, which was always quite all for show, I think. But like I say, for the goal, it looked kind of like that Elliot Nevitt's kind of done exactly what you want him to do, really. He's got out, he's got in front of him, and he's put it away. It was a lovely little header. And for the first time then, almost all night, it really felt like the crowd got into it at that point. Everybody was kind of behind the team then. There'd really not been a lot to shout about. I mean, I think that was only like our second or third like attempt on goal by this point in the game. So, yeah, there'd really not been too much to shout about. So it was nice then to kind of hear that sort of roar and everybody trying to get behind the team at that point.
I think the changes that he made as well, obviously, Cooney came off at half-time and Kalamagis, if that's how you pronounce it, apologies if it isn't, Kalamagis came on and was playing in the sort of 10 role, which meant that Tracy could go out wide. And it felt like we were starting to really put him under a bit of pressure there. After the goal, the crowd were up. You could see them starting to wilt a little bit. And for a while, it did feel like, despite all of the issues, despite their weakened team, despite the injuries and the illness, that this team that never knows when it's beaten might still get something out of the game. The third goal was just, again, like the first, it was just a killer.
Yeah, that was my next two notes, Tim. So, Steve, I'll just come to you. It did feel like the crowd lifted noticeably after Nevitt scored. But then, is it a case the third goal is just a tired team making tired mistakes and switching off?
Yeah, I think if it was a betting man, I'm not, thankfully, I'd be skint. I'd have put money on us getting that equaliser at 2-1. I thought, here we go again, we're back, as it were. But then, as you said, the third was a killer. And it was, it was slack marking, and it was no pressure on the cross, and then nobody picking up Whitfield again in the middle. And it did. It just looked tired, didn't it? It looked tired, and it looked like we were almost out on our feet, which is not a surprise, really, when the only players we've got are either played however many games on the trot, and there's literally kids coming off the bench, whereas they'd obviously got five seasoned pros to bring on who were all about 6'3". So, it just absolutely burst our balloon, didn't it? Then, and it was game over, really, because we were done, I think, then. And I think any emotional sort of encouragement we had at that stage was gone, wasn't it? Dashed.
I think when we saw the team, and knowing what we know now about the circumstances behind even the players that we could get on the pitch, it really needed everything to go our way. You're playing players out of position that aren't used to, take the example of Aaron Rowe from that throw-in. They aren't used to necessarily picking up runners, etc., from throw-ins. It needed everything to go our way. So when you've got decisions going against you and, you're just on a hide into nothing. But I think the positive to come from the performance as a whole, and I know I'm probably jumping ahead again there, Stu, and stealing your questions, is that goal aside, I mean, that was pretty much the third goal. It was against the run of play, right? And yeah, they didn't actually create a huge amount. It wasn't like Booth was making save after save or they missed a load of sitters. The three goals aside, I can't really remember them having a clear-cut chance. So, it was probably a game between, in the circumstances, two pretty limited sides. But because everything went against us, decisions and the team news as we knew it, it was just too big a mountain to climb.
I was just going to say as well, I think I probably would give Barrow probably a little bit of credit on that third goal, because like we kind of just mentioned and Tim mentioned there, that as the throw-in comes in, he kind of notices that Rowe's checking something, he's looking the other way. So as he notices that Rowe's looking the other way, he kind of takes the throw-in quite quickly. I think that was quite an astute play, I think, by them, at least. The marking in the centre of the half was, like Steve says, did look in the centre of the box, sorry, like Steve said, did look a bit lethargic, I suppose, like you say, from that point. But I thought it was quite a clever bit of play for them to jump on that sort of lack of focus there for a minute.
Okay, right. Let's talk then about something that we haven't talked about yet, and that is the crowd. 7,650-ish, just short, a couple of people short of that. It's incredibly good. Little bit short of the optimistic total of 8,000, but a biggest home attendance for a long, long time. Take away the away fans. Steve, there's still over 7,000 home fans there. That is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And like back in the old days, wasn't it? It was, you know, queuing to get to the loo and stuff like that, which obviously we're not used to handling that many in that, particularly in that main stand anyway. But absolutely fantastic to see, really. And lots of kids and people of all sorts of ages there. It was really, really good, and really good to be amongst, for once, not a lot of red seats. But just a shame, really, that as things conspired, that we hadn't got much of a side to put out, and it wasn't the best game, was it? It would have been great if it had been a 3-3 and excitement and goal mouth action at both ends, but you can't have everything, I guess.
We do like romanticize those championship days, I think, from when, you know, those were the days when we were going to be getting those kind of crowds. I seem to remember a lot of probably losing 3-1 back then as well, if I'm honest. Yeah, so true. it kind of fit in, I think.
What I would say, Tim, and I'm going to come to you here for this one. I do want to say again, well done to everyone involved, the club, the supporters, anyone who did anything to help. Tim, I believe you were one of those people out leafleting. But I do feel that our job here on the podcast as fans, dare I say it, as well as a mouthpiece for the fans, is what's next? We've done this now. It's gone really, really well. I'd want to see what's next to keep the momentum. You know, we've had 7,500 3 days before Christmas. That is amazing. It can't be a one-off, though. So, you know, I think that's an important point to make, isn't it, Tim? That it has to go somewhere. There has to be a point to this.
I think what's gone really well this time is they've made the decision well in advance and publicised it relatively well. And obviously the Rail Women Supporters Group and a number of other people have played a part in helping to push it. I think it went well. Obviously, it could have gone better with a win. You know, I think most of us would look back on our first games that we were taken to, and, you know, it's probably not a surprise that a lot of us saw a win and kept on coming because of that. I guess what I'd like to see is them to repeat it again at some point later in the season, maybe, you know, April, May, when there's a bit of warm weather. Again, publicise it well, and let's see if we can repeat it and hopefully get 3 points as well that people will go home and remember and want to come again.
Yeah, fantastic. Just jump in there and say, yeah, brilliant, great stuff by the club. Some real effort put in there. And I think that it does show that with the right marketing and the right incentives, that the market is there. Now, where it goes from here, I don't know. I suppose, is there a case for doing some halfway house measures for future games? You know, for every adult, you can get a free child with them or whatever, because that makes it all the more appealing, and that family day out, doesn't it? If because they do it with the season tickets, 11s and unders, if you've got an adult season ticket, you can get an 11 and under for free. So why don't extend that to the normal match day experience for the World Cup fans? Because there's plenty of seats, and let's be honest, every kid wants to buy a hot dog, don't they? And at £4.50 or whatever the hot dogs are nowadays, that's all money in the bank, isn't it? And it's more than nothing.
Just to build off what you're saying there, Steve, I can only really add like a personal anecdote. But last night in particular, I took one of my friends who is not a Crewe fan. You know, he's been to the odd game here and there because he's a local team, but he's not really a Crewe fan. Glory hunter that he is. But he went down and he took his 7-year-old lad. So the three of us drove down last night and we went to the game, and And we came away, and the 7-year-old, like, despite obviously the result, he absolutely loved it. He was buzzing. He got his hot dog at halftime, like you say, Steve, because that's what, you know, that's what they want.
They'll do.
Yeah. And he was saying, brilliant, when can we come again, Dad? And it's like, his dad was a bit like, well, we'll have to see, because it's fine going when it's £10 a ticket, maybe, but it's the £27 plus whatever it's going to take for the I'm not sure on the pricing for under 11s at the minute, but yeah, it's, and then that adds up pretty quickly, doesn't it? Then into quite an expensive afternoon out. So you know, it's one of them. I think that there is that momentum, because, like you say, he wasn't that bothered that we lost 3-1. We obviously had that one goal that he could cheer about at least, and he did seem to enjoy himself. So,
but it's something, let's the club build on it, and well done.
He's there, yeah, exactly.
Let's not let it die a death straight away. Let's see if there's some other things that we can tweak. But I guess they'll have plans as well, won't they? Because they're realistic to the fact that they've got Stoke one direction, United and Liverpool and City and everybody the other direction. So I think that the new hierarchy are aware of the need to market, and hopefully this is the first of many.
If I can give them an idea, last home game of the season, £10 ticket, all Alex Academy side, 2-0 win over Wrexham, secure our place in the playoffs. There we go. I don't know how that would work because of, you know, away fans in the home end and customer numbers and all that, if you're trying to attract new fans, but I'm just an ideas man. They can sort out the logistics, but that's the dream scenario. Okay, I think that will do us for the Barrow game then. Next, we'll turn our attention to the two games coming up over the festive week. Aaron, Boxing Day sees us make the short trip down the M6 to Walsall. It was a 2-2 draw at the beginning of the season. To be honest with you, when I saw them at that stage, I would say now I'm surprised not to see them have kicked on a little bit. I thought they were quite good back in August.
Yeah, it's a good away day, like you say. It's just down the road, easy enough to get to normally if it's not Boxing Day. I'm not quite sure what public transport's going to be like. And it's usually a pretty good place for us to go to as well. So I'm in agreement with you, because I thought they were a half decent side, like you say, when they came up at the start of the season. It was very much in this vein of when we were making sure we went 2-0 down before we started playing, which maybe hasn't actually gone away looking at last night's evidence. But it is a bit of a shock to see them maybe not doing quite as well as they have. I haven't tracked them quite as closely as possibly some people on this call even have. So I couldn't really comment on why they've not necessarily kicked on quite as well. But it should be an interesting one to see. I guess you kind of reacquaint yourself and see where we are at compared to, which is going to be a little bit difficult, like say, given the number of issues we've got with the squad. But yeah, it should be an interesting game, but definitely one. Even if you think that, you know, Barrow obviously are doing really well, and I think we fairly acquitted ourselves okay last night. So I think we could give it a good go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, won't it? Because as you said, I thought they looked half decent early in the season, but what are they, about 15th, 16th, aren't they? Something like that. They don't seem to have strung many results together. But I think the worry will be like it was for the game last night, that who have we got? Have we got any availability? Because, you know, we've got the injuries, suspensions, and is Luke Offord back? Or has he got one, or has he got three games? I don't know. It all went a bit quiet, didn't it, there, in regards to that? And also, I've got a concern. Isn't Connor Thomas very near a ban? I'm sure that was either his fourth or his fifth yellow last night. So he may be missing. And if so, we've got no fit midfielders in the club, have we? It's a parlous state to be in, and it will be really interesting to see what sort of team we put out and if we've got any of them off their sick beds.
Be the rare 5-0-5 formation, Steve.
Yeah, go for it.
They did look a good team when we played them, but I think up until relatively recently, Matt Sadler, obviously, yeah, Sadler's, I think he was pretty unpopular, and it was looking like they were going to boot him out. But results have picked up. I think up until, I mean, we're recording this Saturday afternoon and they're currently 1-0 down away at Accrington. But up until then, I think they'd won the last three on the spin. So they're not in decent form. I think they've only lost to our mate Sparrow since early November. So we're probably playing them at a pretty awful time, to be honest, especially when you consider the state of our squad. I like going to Walsall. Brings back happy memories of the early 90s when we gubbed them 9-3 on aggregate in the playoffs. I'll never forget the away end that day in the second leg. One of the games, only games I've actually lost count of the score. I think we obviously scored four. I think we had about three disallowed goals. And by the final whistle, I had no idea what the score was. I'll be going. Probably more in hope than expectation, if I'm being honest. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Donovan Daniels pops up and nods one in.
Or dives over for a horrendous penalty.
All right, Tim, you can give me a score prediction. You can either give me one you hope for, one you expect to see.
They've seemed to be doing dealing in 1-0s lately, so I will go another 1-0. But Luke Offord's back. He's going to nod one in, and it's going to be 1-0 crew.
All right, Steve.
I'm going to be all bravado and hopeful. 1-1.
And Aaron.
My default on most of our games at the minute is the Desmond.
Fair enough. Okay, with the Christmas schedule, I wasn't able to get a Walsall fan back on the pod this week, so we'll just move straight on to Newport. Aaron, I will come straight back to you. It's a return for CBR again, but it's a first return back to Newport for Mickey. So a couple of players that know exactly what to get and what how to play at Rodney Parade.
Yeah, another one of those early season games, wasn't it? When we played earlier on, it should be interesting. As far as I'm aware, I think that Mickey is still fairly well liked from their fans. So hopefully there'll be a good reception for him, and I'm hoping he has a really good game because I think we're going to need it again. Should be, I guess, an interesting game. I'm not really sure how it's going to play out. Again, I've not kind of kept up with how Newport have been doing too closely, but yeah, I'm again hopeful because you know we're another week on. Any of these lingering illnesses might have cleared up by then, hopefully. We live in hope, I guess, at this point.
Steve, it's the first chance for this crew team to do a double over a team in the league this season. Are you optimistic that will happen?
It will depend, won't it, on how many of them are back from an illness or injury, I guess. I think we definitely taught them a lesson, didn't we, at our place? That was that half an hour or whatever of football that was sublime and on another level to anything that they could play. I'm actually going to go, I think, 1-0. I'm going to go for it on this one. I think we must be due another result, and we should be confident with what we did to them at our place. So,
thank you, Steve. Aaron?
I think I'll stick with that, except I still never think that we can keep a clean sheet, so I'll say 2-1.
All right, and then Tim.
Horrible place to go, Rodney Parade, isn't it? It's one of them big, vast open grounds, windy and miserable. Probably a game too far, maybe lose 2-1.
Okay. I did get a Newport fan on for this one, Ed from the 1912 Exiles. Just in case it sounds out of date, we recorded this before Crew's game and before Newport's game on Saturday, so the league positions might not be correct. Hi, Ed. Welcome back to the podcast.
Grand, good afternoon.
Right, I thought we would start with the game back in August. It ended in a 4-2 victory for the Alex. I suppose you, as a Newport fan, were fully expecting Mickey to score against you, although he did that not once but twice. What were your thoughts on that, and your thoughts on the game as a whole?
I mean, yeah, like you say, it was inevitable that Mickey was going to play out of his skin in that one, and I'm sure we'll talk about him a fair bit in a moment. It's one of those games, you know, 4-2 makes it sound as though we were kind of in it, but really, I mean, I wasn't there that night, but I spoke to several who were. County never really showed up in that game. We looked and were very, very fragile at the back defensively at that point. It was a bit of an early season reality check. You know, we started the game with a few, started the season with a few good results. I think that trip to Crewe probably made us realise that, yeah, as expected, this season was going to be a real test of our ability. I think the other thing, actually, looking back, that in retrospect is probably clear, is that Crewe were a much better and are a much better side this season than last year. You've kicked on from last season. We probably have maybe not quite slipped backwards, but you know, it's such a tough league this year. If you look at the quality of not just the big spenders like Wrexham and Notts County and Gillingham, but teams like Stockport, who I think are a really good team this season. It's such a strong league and there's no real like basket case club. So yeah, I think it probably underlined just what a challenge this season is going to be.
So let's just fill in the gaps then from August to now. You've said that it possibly gave you an eye-opener on the season. I looked at the table and obviously we're recording this quite a way in advance before our game next Friday. You're currently, as we are talking, 17th, but weirdly 11 points off the relegation spaces and only 6 points off the playoffs. So where do you see this season going for Newport? Is it about survival or is it higher than that?
Oh, very much the former. We might be 6 points off the playoffs, but that feels like a very big gap to bridge. Going into this season, look, we've got the lowest budget in the whole of the Football League. We had myriad financial problems off the pitch over the summer. We've also had a massive injury crisis in the first half of the season. Most of our first-choice defenders have been out for at least some amount of time. So the fact that we're on 26 points, I think, now, with half the games played, halfway towards that survival target, hopefully in a position to strengthen a little bit in January, I think that's fine for us. Mid-table and a cup run, that'll do me this season.
Okay, let's go on to the players then. Will Evans, I think he's, again, at the time of us talking, he's on 13 goals already this season in a team that you've just, you know, described as one that is looking just to survive in League Two. Is there a possibility he might be snatched away with January around the corner? And then a second question is, who else should we be looking for in this Newport team?
Yeah, so, I mean, let's start off by talking about Will Evans, the Slang Edwin News ABO, as he's become known on our pod, at least. He's been such a great addition for us. We brought him in last season from the Welsh Leagues. He was industrious, hardworking, could play in pretty much any position on the pitch if asked to. A little bit raw at that point, but this season he's kicked on and he's now one of the senior pros in the dressing room. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there are bids for him in January. Certainly, I struggle to see him in a county shirt next season because I think he will go on and play higher. He's got, you know, not just an ability to score goals, but as I say, his work rate is incredible. He does the high press stuff that Graham Coughlan really values in the team. And he's versatile. You know, he can play left back, left wing, centre mid, up front. He'd probably drive the team bus if someone asked him to. He's that sort of player. So he has been fantastic. I really hope that we keep him in January. I'd like to think we might get another half season out of him. But really, this year has been a kind of proper squad effort because of the injuries we've had. You know, there was a concerted effort over the summer to sign players who were versatile, who could play two or three positions because we knew we'd have a small squad. And, you know, you see it in players like Shane McLaughlin, who's played right fullback, left fullback. He's played centre-back, centre-mid. He's scored some fantastic goals. He got one against Stockport that, you know, was a sweetly hit shot that any fullback would be proud of. He's done really well. And the other player who I think is likely to cause Crewe some trouble on whatever weird midweek game it is Seb Palmer-Holden, who we've got on loan from Bristol City, centre-forward. Big, imposing, looks like the Jolly Green Giant. But as well as that, is quick, and again is one who will be playing at a higher level next season. He's scored a fair few already and is now looking extremely dangerous. So I think he will cause Mickey Dimitriou no end of problems.
All right. I think that leaves me with one question. I'm going to ask you two questions, Ed, to finish off with. Is Mickey going to score again? And what's the score going to be? I think it's a week on Friday or Friday night when this goes out.
Is Mickey going to score again? God, I really hope not. I mean, it broke our hearts when he scored against us at Gresty Road. If he does it at Rodney Parade, then there'll be tears all around. Look, we love Mickey as a player, as a captain, as just a good human being. No one begrudged him going over the summer. I think the surprise was that maybe he didn't move higher up in the league, but I think he wants to be close to home and everything else. And we only wish good things to Mickey Dimitriou, but I really hope he has an evening to forget when it comes to that return fixture. As for the game itself, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it for entirely private reasons. My youngest child is being the mascot that day, so he will be leading the team out onto the pitch. So we will be in full attendance as a family. I would love to think we might get a win. But having said that, we've got some really tough games around the fixture. So we've got Wrexham coming up, which is a big, it's not a derby, but it's a big grudge fixture. Lots of interest from the Welsh media. We've then got Forest Green Rovers at home on Boxing Day. And then we go away to Sutton at the very start of the new year. Both of those two, of course, in the relegation places. So, you know, that's games where if we can get 6 points from 6 points from those, it puts a bit more distance between us and the bottom two. So within that little run of fixtures, Crewe is probably the kind of least important in a funny way. So I'm going to say it's probably going to end up a draw. I'm going to say 1-1.
All right, Ed, thank you for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
Right, we're just going to finish with one thing this week. Tim, last week I did announce that the Last Man Standing competition that you're going to lead is going to start in January. Did I do a good job of explaining it? Did I miss anything out, any crucial information?
No, I think you covered it fairly well. I think the key thing to understand is it's a competition you enter once. It's £5 to enter. And then it keeps going until there's one person left. And they win. So the way it works is you enter, you pay £5, you pick a League Two team. If they win, you're through to the next week. If they don't, if they draw or lose, then you're out. Eventually, there'll be one person left and they'll win the pot. So what we've decided is that half the pot will be for the winner. Half the pot will go towards a good Crewe Alex-related cause. I think we're looking at the women's team, right, Stu? And you can only pick each team once. So if you pick, I don't know, Stockport and Wrexham in your first couple of weeks, then you won't be able to pick them for the rest of the game. So choose wisely.
Yeah, I think the women's team is what we're going to go with. We did look at splitting it three ways, but I just don't think it's feasible. But what I did do this week was I did a little poll on Facebook and Twitter. We had over 100 people responding saying they'd be interested. So, you know, by my maths, £5 to enter, £250 for the women's team, £250 for the winner. So if that does sound something you'd be interested in, there will be information. Like I said last week, we're going to get it started after the FA Cup for a third round, just so it's a full game week for League Two.
And there will be a dedicated email address for that, which is railwomenpodcast@gmx.com.
We will put that in the info as well. Okay. I think that will do us for now. Aaron, Steve and Tim, thank you so much for coming on today, giving up a bit of your Christmas weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, as ever, for listening. We will be back next week. Until then, enjoy your week, eat, drink and be merry. Merry Christmas and goodbye. Dang a dang dang for ding a dong ding blue moon.